is the Shit You Need to Know podcast. I'm your host, Martha Riley. I'm a TEDx speaker, cheese pizza lover, and master human connector. I help introverts, people with social anxiety, and awkward humans of the world find confidence, connection, and their cool factor. Because have you ever been to a party and someone asked you a question that you didn't know the answer to? Yeah, me too. It fucking sucks. But that's where I come in. I'm asking the questions so you'll have the answers. So sit back, relax, because there's shit we need to know. Hello and welcome to the Shit You Need to Know podcast. I'm your host, Martha Riley, and I just found two gray hairs in my head. So I don't know. Am I young? Am I old? Do I go completely gray now? I was expecting at least 5 more years before I would have to deal with this. I asked my parents, I was like, hey, when did you guys start going gray? And my dad started going gray when he was like 18. My mom was like 35. So I guess I just fucking split the difference. I'm old now. We're going to embrace it. I mean, hell, I just saw The Matrix for the first time, like a 1999 movie in 2019. I'm just regressing in age. I don't like it. Anyway, before we get started with our guest for the week, I wanted to ask you a question. And, after doing this for 32 episodes, I'm kind of out of questions. So I had you take to Google, and this one's a fairly easy one. So mountains or beach? This is hard for me because I really like both. I like the beauty of mountains, but goddamn, if I just don't like laying by the beach and drinking cosmopolitans that people bring to you. And the sun, it's warm, but the mountains are so majestic. So I'm really torn on this one. I don't really have an answer. I guess if I had to vote on my own poll, I would probably say beach. You can find me on Instagram at RealMarthaRiley to answer this, and we'll see where it goes. On this week's episode, I have Leah Carey, host of the Good Girls Talk About Sex podcast. She specializes in communicating with partners, and not only like current partners, but potential partners as well, because it's really hard to open up in those situations, and especially as introverts. Even now with my current partner, I find myself like, oh, could you do it that way? And I feel like bad, like I feel like I'm not supposed to open up, but if we're not comfortable with doing that and asking for what we want, our sexual experiences will not be as good as they can be. So once the conversation starts and gets the ball rolling, Leah comes in and provides you with some awesome tools to help communicate to your partner with what you need, and stuff you probably wouldn't even think about what you need. I loved having Leah on the show, and be sure to listen for her free offer for Shit You Need to Know listeners. You can go to leahcarey.com/shit. It'll be in the show notes as well to get your free yes, no, maybe checklist. I downloaded it and it's awesome. It goes through, well, she'll talk about it more in the show, but it basically goes through, you know, okay, I'd be into that. Hell no, I don't want to do that. And maybe I'd try that if the conditions were right in terms of different sexual situations. So Leah, take it away.
My name is Leah Carey, and I am a sexual communication coach, which means that I work with people to help them figure out what it is they really, really want in the bedroom, and then how to talk about it with their partner so that they can actually get it. There's a huge communication gap right now in our bedrooms, which means that a lot of us aren't getting what we want. And on top of that, a lot of people don't even know what they want. So that's what I'm here trying to help people figure out.
How did this come about? Because this is not probably a typical career path.
So this is very much one of those like teaching what you need to learn stories. I grew up in a home where there was a lot of emotional abuse and sexual impropriety. And I grew up really, really confused about what my role was supposed to be as a female and as a sexual person. My dad would say to me pretty regularly, or if he didn't actually say the words, he would certainly give me the message in many different ways that I was fat, I was ugly, and I was unlovable. And that he had to lock me in my room until I was 30 so boys couldn't get to me. So, like, that's pretty confusing, the getting both the message that I'm unlovable and no one will ever want me, but also I need to be locked away because everyone's going to want me. And so that left me completely unsure who I was supposed to be and what I was supposed to do and how I was supposed to act. And so my response to that was to become this ultimate good girl who tried to be as perfect as possible. I very much am a recovering perfectionist, some days not as recovered as others. And I just tried to always do the right thing. And as far as I could tell, doing the right thing meant not getting involved in anything that looked like sex or pleasure. I didn't lose my virginity until I was 25. And when I did, having grown up in an abusive home and being told that I would not find anybody better than that, I got into a series of abusive relationships because I thought that was all that I was ever going to be able to have. And in those relationships, sex was awful. It was painful. It was emotionally draining. I didn't want it the way it was, except that I desperately wanted something that I couldn't quite understand. This big idea of great sex, you know, that we're taught through television and movies and magazines and books. I had this idea of what great sex was going to be, but that I was never going to be able to have it. And I lived that way until I was in my early 40s. And at age 42, it kind of got to the point where that was so painful that I needed to do something else. And so I went on what ended up being about a year or a year and a half of a sexual journey of freedom to, you know, learning how to be in my body, learning how to feel. I discovered that part of the reason sex was so unpleasant was because I wasn't having any sexual sensation. Sort of like the pleasure receptors in my body were firing, but they weren't reaching my brain. So over the course of a year, I worked. And I was an incredibly privileged position that I was able to take a year out of my life and do this. I was actually traveling around the country. I was doing this outside of a 9-to-5 job. If I had had a regular job and a regular life, I'm not sure how I would have accomplished this because it took all of my attention and all of my focus. But as I was doing this, I was sharing these stories with my girlfriends. And every time I shared a story, they would want more. And as I started telling them more and more and more of my stories, they started telling me their stories and telling me how helpful it was to hear my story. And that's when I began to put together that these are conversations we desperately need to be having, that we are desperately craving, and yet we rarely, if ever, have them. That was the long version of how I got to doing what I'm doing now. The podcast, Good Girls Talk About Sex, is literally women talking about their sex lives. And then the coaching is working with women to dive deep into what it is they're not saying and what they really want to say, and then how to say that to a partner.
That's a great and a very interesting story. And I'm sure we'll touch back on that later. But I want to go back to the point where you lost your virginity at 25, because that's how old I am right now. Did you feel that you were behind at all, behind the curve? Or now that you look back, you're like, oh no, I'm glad I waited.
That's such a good question. I definitely felt behind the curve. I mean, the majority of my friends had either had sex in high school or early in college. I knew that I was very much an outlier. I was really interested. It was always this tension for me between knowing that there was this thing that I was not allowed to have, but also like just vacuuming up books and movies and television shows that showed or talked about sex. So I was sort of overloading myself with these stories in some attempt to understand it, at the same time believing I would never have it. It was this very uneven thing for me. I desperately, desperately wanted it and believed that I could never have it. So by the time I got to 25, it was my first serious relationship, and I kind of knew from the beginning that it was not a good relationship. But I also, like, the thought in my head was, I don't want to be the oldest living virgin. So I'm just going to be in this relationship so I can finally have sex, because I also believed that I was not the kind of girl who was allowed to have sex outside of a relationship, but nobody would ever actually want me for that. Yeah, it was not good. It was really not good.
No, and I imagine with all the things that your father told you, like, that's a lot of pressure to put on yourself, for sure. And I feel like I definitely felt that pressure. I think I lost my virginity when I was 19. And I guess I was among actually probably the first of my friends, but I still like felt that societally, I don't know if that's a word, I was late. So I'm wondering, like, what other harmful things have you heard about, or like people have told you that they have heard about sex? Because I feel like there's so many, like there's just a lot of wrong information.
Yeah. Oh, so much. Yeah, that's an interesting point, just before I get to your question, that you feel like you're probably one of the earlier people in your friend group, and yet you felt like socially you were getting the message that you were late. I have read some recent studies that suggest that millennials are waiting to have sex until later, and they are having less sex. And there's all sorts of opinions about why that might be. And frankly, I don't really care. What I care about is each individual. Like, I don't care about the grand social plan. I care about each individual doing what is exactly right for them and for their body and for their emotional safety and growth. And even if, as a generation, millennials are having sex later, you're still getting that massive input of media and of social messaging, which is, you know, television shows that regularly depict teenagers having sex, movies, same thing, magazines. I mean, if you think that a 15 to 17 year old is reading teen magazines, you are sadly mistaken. 15 to 17 year olds are reading Cosmo.
Oh yeah, totally. I totally was.
10 to 13 year olds are reading Cosmo Teen or Teen Vogue. The older teenagers are reading the adult magazines and getting all of that stuff about, you know, how to give the perfect blowjob, you know, the stuff that they write about in adult magazines. So I can understand why there would be a gap between what you're actually seeing in your friend group versus what you are getting as cultural messaging. That makes total sense to me.
Let's get into the meat of what you do, and that's sexual communication. What is something that millennials need to be aware of? Well, here, I'll just share my story. Sometimes I have a hard time speaking up in the bedroom just because, A, I don't want to be told no, and B, it's also like kind of embarrassing sometimes, some of the things that I'm interested in. So it's hard for me to be as open as I want with my partner about these things just because I'm not sure how they're going to react. Do you see that as sort of like a common problem, and like maybe not just for millennials, but for everyone, really?
Not just common, I would say practically universal. Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah. So here's the sad truth. We grow up, and I'm talking about Western culture, and I primarily know the United States. So I'm going to make some generalizations based on what I know about the United States. We grow up in a country where not every state is requiring that schools teach sex ed. The states that do require sex ed, there's a significant portion of them that require abstinence only. And then the states that require evidence-based sex ed are still basically only teaching disease prevention and pregnancy prevention. So you may or may not get sex ed at all. It's a pretty safe bet that most people did not get sex ed at home.
Oh, I did not. And I think that's very weird.
Well, parents aren't prepared to talk to this about with their kids because they didn't learn about it. And so the hope is that the school will deal with it, which is maybe not the best place, but it's what we've got right now. So kids go to school. They may or may not get any education at all. If they do get education, what they're learning is sex is scary because I'll get sick. Sex is scary because I'll get pregnant. And if you can bypass all of that, then the messaging is boys get erections and ejaculate and have fun, and girls get periods and are miserable.
Damn, that is so true. Holy crap. I'm like, whoa. Like, yeah, whoa.
Right? So how in the world are we supposed to translate that into, oh yeah, I'm going to go out and have fun and find a partner, and we're going to have this amazing sex life where we talk about exactly what we want and we negotiate it so that we're both getting exactly what we want and we both feel empowered and embodied and ready to step into this exciting experience? Fuck no! That's just not going to happen because none of us were prepared to have those conversations. So I talk to people all the time about their sex lives. And one of the questions I ask is, well, what do you like? And the response is, oh, I like pretty much everything. Like, well, first of all, no, you don't, because, you know, and the easy question is, okay, so does that mean that you're into piss, pee, and poop? Piss, poop, and blood, sorry. And the immediate response is, ew, for most people, not everyone. A large portion of the population is going to have a disgust factor to that. And then I say, okay, so are you into knife play? A huge portion of the population is going to say no to that. So I'm like, okay, so you're not into everything. So what are you into? And they're like, I guess I don't really know. I never thought about it. Well, yeah, you've never been asked to think about it. You've never been encouraged to think about it. We see one sort of standard example of what sex is supposed to look like across all of our media. And until very recently, it's always shown as a heterosexual couple. So boy likes girl, boy harasses girl until she agrees to go out with him. Boy presses girl up against the wall and kisses her. Cut to, they're naked in bed. That's all we see. So how in the world, if nobody's teaching us anything different, and that is all we see, how are we supposed to develop these skills? I mean, when I was a teenager, I was literally frightened to kiss a boy because I thought that the next step that happened was that we had to get naked and have sex. And I wasn't ready to have sex. So I didn't kiss boys because I had no idea there was anything else in the middle. Very recently, just in the last few years, what's playing out in our media is starting to include some same-sex couples, but they're still playing out exactly the same story. You know, if you go back to the heteronormative example, you substitute another woman for the guy, or you substitute another guy for the girl, but you basically still play out exactly the same scene. It still looks exactly the same. And that doesn't even include our trans brothers and sisters, our, you know, gender non-conforming friends, our people who live outside of the monogamy bubble. I mean, there's just so many options that we never see. So how in the world are we supposed to learn to talk about them until somebody speaks up and says, this is not all there is. You are not only capable of more, you're allowed to want more. You're allowed to have more.
That's a very interesting point, I think, because we say that we're into everything, but like how do we know and how do we talk about that too? I think that's the next step. I know I saw on your website today the checklist of things that you could maybe be into, and I've seen a version of that before as well. And I think that's a super handy tool to start, but are there other ways we can get to talking about this kind of stuff?
Yeah. So what you're referring to is the yes, no, maybe checklist that I put together. And this actually is my favorite tool to begin these conversations. This is an idea that comes out of the BDSM culture. For people who aren't familiar, those letters stand for bondage and discipline, dominance and submission, and sadism and masochism. So there are several different things included in those four letters. And the BDSM community, by necessity, is really big on communication. Because if you're going to take away somebody's ability to move by tying them down, or if you're going to put a gag in somebody's mouth, like these are ways that you are severely limiting their ability to communicate. And so you have to communicate in advance so that you know exactly what their yeses are and what their no's are. You need to know what their hard red lines are. You need to know what gives them pleasure and what might trigger them into a trauma response, because we all have those. It's not just, you know, people who were messed up in childhood or people who have experienced some sexual trauma. We all have some types of triggers. So this is an idea that's really well known in the BDSM community. But as I started talking to clients about what they wanted and what they were into, again and again, I was coming up against this idea of, well, what do I like? I don't know. I don't even know where to start figuring that out. And so I started looking for a yes, no, maybe checklist for sort of vanilla couples or for beginners. And I couldn't find anything that felt like it was really comprehensive. So that's why I created this one. The idea is that you and your partner, you print out two copies, you each fill out your copy, and it gives you loads and loads of options so that you don't have to come up with your own thoughts about these things you might want to try. You know, there's a section on public displays of affection. Do you enjoy kissing in public or not? Do you enjoy holding hands in public or not? Then there's a section on cuddling, like what are your preferences around cuddling? There's a section on sexual positions, which positions feel really good to you and which don't. And you are not broken if there's a position you don't like. And then, you know, getting into deeper and deeper territory of sexuality. And so for every line on the checklist, you get to say either, yes, that's something I love the idea of, no, that's something I really don't ever want to do, or I can't imagine right now ever wanting to do because things change, or maybe this is something I would want to try under the right circumstances with the right conversation. And in the yes column, you get to then rate things. So because there's a difference between a yes, it's like, oh my God, yes, I totally want to do that. Like, can we do that every time we have sex? And a yes that's like, you know, I'm willing to do it once in a while because I know my partner enjoys it. Like, those are two radically different yeses. So you then get to come together with your partner and discover things that you're both interested in that maybe you never knew. There was a woman, Amy, who was on my podcast a couple months ago. She told this story that she and her husband had been together for over 20 years. 20 years. And they did not know that they were both harboring the same fantasy. But that's the thing. We don't talk because we're afraid that our partner's going to be like, that's crazy. Like, you're gross. And so that's the kind of stuff that I hope people will discover through this checklist, is there are things that you're both potentially interested in that you're not talking about. On the flip side, there may be things that you're doing that one or the other of you doesn't actually enjoy, but you've never said it out loud because it was scary to say it out loud. And this gives you a space to start having those conversations and then those negotiations. And I will make this checklist available to your listeners. Yeah, if you go to leahcarey.com/shit, because hell yeah.
Love it.
leahcarey.com/shit, and you can download the checklist.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I wanted to ask a little bit, what do you do when you have a partner mismatch? So like either maybe they're not into some of the same things you are, or one of you has a higher sex drive. How can you communicate around that?
Yeah, it's a challenge. I mean, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It's a challenge. And some of your listeners may be familiar with Dan Savage. He's a really popular Sex is Vice columnist. And he talks about the cost of entry, that every relationship has a cost of entry. And either you're willing to pay it or you're not. So if one of you has a sexual desire that the other one is like, I'm not super into it, but I'm willing to do it in order to be with you, that's a cost of entry that you're willing to pay. But if there's something that one of you is really into and the other one is like, nope, I am a hard, hard no on that, then you have to negotiate about, okay, so is this a deal breaker? Like, is this something that you want so desperately and you only want to have it with your committed partner, and therefore this relationship is unworkable? Or are there other ways that we can work around it? Maybe that means going to a sex worker to get that need taken care of. There are multiple options. Maybe it means watching some porn together where that activity is depicted and you are with your partner and stimulating your partner so that they have the visual input of seeing the activity and the pleasure of you stimulating them, but you don't actually have to do the thing. Like, there are different ways around this, but it does require communication. It does require that both of you are willing to come to the table and have some hard talks.
Yeah, I am familiar with Dan Savage, and I know he talks about something called monogamish. And I think that also applies here too. If you, you know, maybe need to find your, you know, satisfy your needs in other ways, as long as it is done in a respectful and consensual way. Because I think,
yeah,
maybe people would see this as like, oh, they don't want to flog me, I'm going to go find someone else to do it and not tell this other person. And that's cheating.
Right. Absolutely. So yeah, there's this thing called consensual non-monogamy, which means that you and your partner have agreements. You have boundaries around your agreements. And monogamish would be considered consensual non-monogamy. It basically covers anything where you have a committed partner and you also have some sexual interaction with other people, whether you and your partner do that together or separately. Even if you and your partner make the agreement to make this accommodation, so let's say you agree that I'm not super cool with doing this particular activity with you, and so I am going to say that it's okay for you to go to a sex worker once a month or once every 3 months to get this itch scratched. If you then go to a sex worker once a week, you are not adhering to the boundaries that the two of you have put in place. So therefore, yes, that's cheating, as is going to sex parties or meeting someone in a bar and taking them up to your hotel room. If it's not within the boundaries of what the two of you have communicated and agreed to, yes, all of those things are violations, which is why these types of arrangements require excellent communication and require both partners to be really honest. If both partners are willing to be really honest and to go through those hard conversations, these situations are eminently doable and can be very successful. The reason that we only hear about the ones that are disasters is because nobody's out there talking about the ones that are successful, because it's not socially acceptable. But that doesn't mean that lots and lots of people aren't doing it.
Oh, for sure. I guess I have been a part of the BDSM and kink community for a while now, and I always thought that, oh no, this is weird, like, I don't want to do this. But then once you sort of open yourself up and become, you know, involved in this sort of thing, there's a lot of people, and a lot of really great people too. And I think that may be another misconception, but maybe that's a podcast for another time. But how important would you say that being, like, sexually open is important, to the sense that, like, you like what you like, but is there room to add more things or be a little bit more open than you maybe normally would?
I think it depends on every person and every individual person's tolerances. I am really hesitant to make really broad sweeping generalizations, because there are so many people who fall outside of those generalizations, and then they either feel like they're not being seen and not being heard, or they feel like they are broken and wrong. So I guess the question is, are you really satisfied with what you are experiencing? Like, are you deep in your soul really satisfied with, you know, your sexual platter of A, B, and C? If you are, and you're not feeling any conflict about needing to branch out, wonderful. Keep doing what you're doing, you know, like, you do you. That's awesome. If, on the other hand, you're doing exactly those same things and you are internally feeling like, I'm missing something, even if you don't know what that thing is that you're missing, then yeah, maybe you want to explore some more. The danger comes in the fact that we have not been encouraged to explore what those feelings mean or how to decode them, or even that we're allowed to have those feelings at all. You know, for me, the reason I didn't explore is because I didn't know that I was allowed to. I didn't know that I was allowed to say, I'm not having pleasure, and so can we do something different? That no one had ever suggested that to me, so I didn't know I was allowed to. So that's a huge part of what I want to be doing, is saying to people, if you're happy, awesome, keep doing what you're doing. If you're not completely satisfied, you are allowed to look for alternate options. You are allowed to ask for different things. You are allowed to pursue and advocate for your pleasure.
So that brings up another good question. When does it become, I guess, okay, how do I phrase this? So say you're sexually incompatible and you've been trying really hard to make it work, or maybe you just, one person wants one thing, but they're just not willing. What's sort of the point when you need to be like, okay, maybe this person isn't right for me? Because I feel like more and more that I'm realizing as I grow up, I guess you could say, I'm like, sexual stuff is a big part of what I want in a relationship and what my relationship is based on. But I know that's not true for everyone. So at what point do you sort of be like, okay, no, like, on to the next? They could be a really great person, but they're just not for me.
Yeah. And you know, we tend to put sex in a box and say everything else is more important, and sex is sort of the icing. Like, if you have great sex, good for you. And if you don't, well, that's just, you know, that's just life. I would say that prioritizing sexual compatibility when looking for a long-term partner should be as important as emotional compatibility, should be as important as, you know, do we enjoy doing the same things on a Saturday night? Do we have similar values around money? You know, like, there are some big building blocks that we prioritize around relationships, and I think sex should be one of them, because ultimately this is the person you're going to be sitting across from at the breakfast table each morning, And wouldn't you rather have a satisfied smile on your face than be glaring at each other with resentment over what is or is not happening in your bedroom? Because that's what happens, right? Like, if we're not getting the fulfillment that we desire in the bedroom, that shit doesn't just disappear when the sun comes up. We take that resentment into every other area of our relationship. So yeah, your question about when do you call it? I don't know. It's a super individualized question, but I think that the best way that I know how to answer it is that you call it when the pain of not being compatible is greater than the pleasure you have in the compatibilities you do have.
That makes a lot of sense, I think. I think it's something we don't really think about because, for me at least, the more your sexual world sort of opens up, the more you realize that you can do. Well, some people are still very much like they don't watch porn, they don't do any of that. So it's just been very interesting for me to see, as well as some of like my friends' preferences as well. And they're like, oh, you do that? I'm like, yeah, it's fun. Mm. Right, sometimes. So I also find that there can be a little judgment for some of those things, I guess. So how do I communicate that to my friends? Maybe that's a good example of a question. How do I bring up sex in like a very respectful way and not like looking down on anyone's preferences?
Mm. So you mean if you're chatting with your girlfriends over mimosas, or you're talking like bringing it up in what context?
Definitely. Like mimosas, like, oh, like I tried this new thing in the bedroom last night. I don't want to be judged for bringing that thing up. And I also don't want them feeling like I'm judging them just because I'm doing this. It doesn't make me better or worse, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. So all I can tell you is my own experience, which is that the more I talked about what I was going through, the more my friends wanted to hear. And that I was talking about it from a place where it wasn't necessarily all about the activity. It was about what I was experiencing. So it was like, hey girls, I went out and I, you know, had a threesome and I totally got banged. And I, you know, I had an orgasm that was the biggest orgasm I've ever had. Like, that's going to make other people feel inferior and is going to potentially bring a lot of judgment because it's an experience they've never had. It's potentially an experience they want to have. And so jealousy is going to come out as judgmental. There are lots of different ways people might respond to that. But when I shared from the point of view of, so I had a threesome last night and it was actually kind of challenging. Like, there were moments that were really good when the three of us were playing and I felt really seen, and I felt like they really wanted me, and it was really delicious to have, multiple hands on my body. But at the same time, they're a couple and I was the third, and I kind of felt like a third wheel. And there were times when I felt left out. Like, if you can share from the point of view of what was really authentically going on inside of you, my experience has been that people respond to that so intensely, and they will come back and share with you all of their stories, usually from a similar place of self-reflection. I think that's what we're all really wanting, is to hear those stories in a way that allow us to really see each other and connect with each other and not have it be like a, you know, who got banged the hardest kind of competition.
That's a good point.
You were asking about common misconceptions. I would say the biggest common misconception is that we're all supposed to go into the bedroom and it's supposed to unfold completely naturally, and no one is supposed to have to say anything. You know, if I had a nickel for every time I heard somebody say, well, if he loved me, he would just know what to do. Like, I'm sorry, that is not real. What is real is that every single one of us, every single body on this planet has different pleasure zones, has different pleasure responses, has different ways they like to be touched, has different places they like to be touched, has different ways they want to be talked to. You know, it's just this immense smorgasbord of amazingness, and every person is completely unique. So this idea that somebody is going to walk in the door and know exactly how to touch you and do it perfectly, like, if you find that person, God bless you. But most of us will never find that person, because that person is a unicorn. Like, they don't, it's a mythical creature. The reason that so many people are so dissatisfied with their sex lives is because they are expecting it to happen without them having to talk about it. That is not reality. You would not go into a restaurant and just sit quietly and wait for the waiter to bring you your favorite dishes without you having to tell them anything. You go into a restaurant and you say, I want the linguine pasta with the meat sauce and the spicy meatballs. I want garlic bread. I want a soda. I want the tiramisu for, like, you give them very specific directions. And that way, hopefully, your desires get fulfilled exactly the way that you want them to be fulfilled. The same is true in the bedroom. You are responsible for figuring out what it is you want and then communicating that to your partner. And when I say the word responsible, maybe it feels really scary and like a lot of pressure. It doesn't have to be scary or a lot of pressure, but it does mean that you have to pay attention to some things that we've been told it's not okay to pay attention to. So what, like, if you take nothing else away from this conversation, I want you to hear that you are allowed to think about these things. You are allowed to talk about these things. You are allowed to have desires and to get them fulfilled.
What are some resources that you recommend to maybe learning about these types of things? Because maybe you're curious about BDSM or kink and you don't know where to start, or just really more sex communication in general. What are some of your favorite resources and things that you've picked up along the way?
Yeah, so there are a couple of YouTube channels that I think are really good for people who are just beginning this journey. One is Sexplanations with Dr. Lindsay Doe, D-O-E, and it's explanations with an S on the front of it, Sexplanations. You're welcome to come to my YouTube channel.
Heck yeah.
Which is youtube.com/ I am Leah Carey. And there really is a wealth of information online. It's hard to say, like, here's a hard and fast rule for what good sex information is going to look like, because there's just some, I shouldn't say there's just so much of it. There is a lot of bad information. There's a lot of porn-centric information. And then there's some good stuff. And I would say that if what you're looking at is affirming of who you are, is telling you that you are allowed to have what you want, that isn't sort of pressing on your pain points of what's wrong with you and what's broken with you, I would highly encourage you to stay away from anybody who's telling you that you're wrong and broken, but looking for those resources that affirm who you are as a person and as a sexual being. And I would highly recommend, of course, I'm totally biased, but listening to my podcast, Good Girls Talk About Sex, because what you will hear in those conversations is lots of different women telling their stories, their sexual histories, and their sex stories. And I make a really big effort to have a huge variety of people. So people of all ages, people of all body sizes and body shapes, people of all races and cultural backgrounds, people across the gender spectrum. So it includes cis women, but it also includes trans women, trans men, because they did have an experience, or at least they grew up in girl bodies, and gender nonconforming people. So just what I have heard from my listeners is that just hearing all of these different points of view has opened them up to the possibilities that there might be other things that they could do or experience. And that has been really empowering for them. And that's why I do what I do.
Well, we need more people like you doing the good work.
Oh, thanks.
Because it's something that we don't think about, because I think naturally, I think we're just bad at communication. I don't know. And especially like adding sex onto that, that's just a whole nother level of like, ooh, like that shit's hard. I don't want to do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, like I keep saying, we were never taught. It would be ridiculous to have the expectation we would be good at something that was never modeled for us.
Totally. Is there anywhere else we can find you?
Yeah. So I'm at leahcarey.com, LEAHCAREY.com. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at I am Leah Carey, LEAHCAREY. And then the podcast Good Girls Talk About Sex is on all of the regular podcasting platforms.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Shit You Need to Know podcast. And that was it, y'all. That's it. That was the last interview I'm going to do for a while. Next week, it is me and my partner Colby, and we're going to just, you know, have fun. We're going to do the thing. It'll be the same shit you need to know that you know and love. We're still going to be talking about things that are interesting and informative, just with two people instead of one. And I can't wait for you to listen. See you next week. Thanks for listening to the Shit You Need to Know podcast. I've set up a phone number in case you have a question you need answering or just want to talk. Feel free to give me a ring at 301-941-7448. That's 301-941-SHIT. Also, don't give me a ring. No one does that. You can text the number too. I don't know why I said ring. If you enjoyed this episode of the Shit You Need to Know podcast, feel free to subscribe on iTunes and rate it 5 stars.